John Harlowski, our guest this evening. His book, A Sorcerer's Apprentice, A Skeptic's Journey into the CIA's Project Stargate. The book has some very sci-fi feel and element to it. Why should people believe you and believe your story in this?
Well, I'll tell you, when I first decided to write this, my idea was that I wanted to take the regular, everyday, ordinary citizen and put them in my mind so that they could experience exactly what I was experiencing and that they would have the same thought as you do that this sounds like science fiction. Because I tell you something, the remote viewing sessions that I depict in the book are exactly as I experienced them. And these sessions were done in group, which means that there were other people that saw what I was doing, that were there and experienced the same thing. They were the ones who looked at my session and saw the session that I wrote and looked at my sketches versus what the actual target was. And the vividness of the experience was almost overwhelming for me. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to share that experience to let people know how exciting doing remote viewing can be. The sessions are depicted exactly the way that I experience them.
We're going to take your phone calls, your questions for our guests. We've got that coming up next, so stay tuned. You're listening to the best in overnight talk radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. John, is there an aspect of time travel, legitimate time travel in remote viewing?
Yes, we found that this particular technology does not have any limitations insofar as space and time is concerned. You can look into the future, you can look into the past. It's not unusual, as a matter of fact, to give a person a target in the past. The only thing is that if you're given a target in the future, we're not exactly sure what that means, whether or not the future is in a fixed form, so that, you know, if you look ahead and you see something that happens in the future and actually does happen in the future, does that mean there is no free will? Or is it of a probabilistic nature? You know, you look into the future to see something that is supposed to happen, and it happens that way. But it was just a fluke, or it was just probability that was happening. We're not exactly sure how that works. But
have
it
you
is
ever
possible.
Have you ever looked at a future event? Has that ever been something that you've focused for?
Oh, I'm trying to recall whether or not I've actually done looking into the future.
Because I would guess in this current day and age of terrorism and things that are going on, if they know that there's going to be, you know, the Olympics are coming up and they give parameters, I would think that that would be important for them. If they could tune in and kind of give a date and a time, like the end of the Olympics, if you're able to pick up on the fact that there's screaming and fire or, you know,
right,
death or something,
right,
that would be an intriguing aspect of what they're doing. And I understand, is it a fixed point? Is it something that you're necessarily touching base with? Because you kind of talk about different levels of reality throughout the book as well, that, you know, does it mean that we're necessarily hitting the reality here? Are we necessarily seeing what's taking place in our plane of existence?
Right. And, you know, there really isn't any way to tell. I do know this, is that looking ahead into the future, you can do it with remote viewing. I mean, I had the experience when I was working in ARV target that inadvertently caused me to view the 9/11 tragedy days before it actually happened, which is in the prologue to the book. And I also know that Paul Smith, one of the original military remote viewers in Stargate was working what he called, or what was known as, an open search outward, whereby the remote viewer is given coordinates by the project manager, but there's no target assigned to them. It's kind of like a wild card. So the viewer goes into session, sends his consciousness basically out into the void, or the matrix as it is known among remote viewers, and simply latches on to whatever is really, really interesting. And that can actually happen outside of the time that they're in. In this case, Paul locked on to a situation where he described a warship being hit by a missile. He described the explosion, the fire, the deaths, the whole thing. And they wrote it up, and they set it up the chain of command, but nothing was ever done about it. I mean, it was read, evidently, but because of the nature of the fact that it was a viewing in future time, I guess it wasn't taken seriously. But 48 hours after Paul had done the viewing, the USS Stark in the Gulf of Sidra was hit by an Exocet missile fired by an Iranian warplane. And it matched exactly the session as Paul saw it. So, can you look ahead and actually see things that will happen in the future? Yes, you can.
That's got to be, that to me would be part of the hardest thing to wrap your head around, is that you're able to, again, not only see specifics of things that are going on concurrently, but also to kind of dip into the parameters of what has yet to come and what has already happened.
Yes,
to get some clarity.
And it brings some real issues into play about the ideas of free will versus determinism.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that physicists look at time. In physics, time, future time, past time, present time, are the same. There is no difference between future time, past time, and the now in physical theory. It's all the same. It's called block time. And that experience, if you look at it that way, then perhaps time as it is in the physical universe is just that way. There's no importance to whether or not it's in the present, the past, or the future. But when consciousness becomes involved, then time takes on an entirely different issue.
When you're doing focus on a target, if you find out, okay, they've set you to look into the studios at KTLK AM 1130 in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and they want you to focus in there, and can you see down to the detail of the documents that I may be holding in my hand? Do you get that detailed of imagery, or is it kind of like a foggy imagery of you can pick up the fact that you're in a building, you're maybe it's like a microphone or some kind of, you know, piece of equipment in front of you? I mean, what kind of detail can you actually get from these?
Well, as I stated earlier, remote viewing is not 100% accurate.
Mm-hmm.
It never was, and it probably never will be. But remote viewers have been able to describe documents, the writing on the documents. They've been able to describe names. But it isn't easy.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the fact that remote viewing seems to be a right-brained, focused type ability, the logical and reading parts of our mind normally aren't connected to that. And so it's very difficult, for instance, to look ahead and using regular remote viewing and get lottery numbers for the lottery.
Right.
Because we don't see usually numbers or letters. They're very difficult. That's not to say that you can't. Remote viewers on operational missions have psychically broken into safes and read classified documents. It isn't easy, and sometimes it isn't entirely accurate, but it can be done. It's just that you have to understand that when you are in remote viewing session, you move in and out of the, I guess you could call it the zone of viewing, because your brain state changes with the experience of what you're seeing. And so, you know, the ethereal fog, if you want to call it that, moves in sometimes, and you have to concentrate on getting back down into the zone area, and then the fog will move away and you'll be able to see again, and then it will drift back in, or it will, it's kind of like viewing through a television that has a broken antenna. You see a lot of static and stuff like that, and then sometimes it clears to crystal clarity, and then other times it'll just fuzz back up and you're having a hard time. People think that because you're doing remote viewing that it's easy. You sit back and you let the show begin, but it isn't. It's hard work, and after you've done a session for 90 minutes, you're tired. It can burn you out.
Has there ever been any correlation between when you find you target, okay, and it turns out your target is Dave Schrader, right? And you ping him and you're picking up on what's going on. Do you ever get the sense that they're aware that you're there?
Well, as I understand it from Lynn Buchanan, if you are using the methodology of CRV, controlled remote viewing, no, there is no way that your target knows that they're being viewed. However, as I understand it from him, if you are using ERV, extended remote viewing, that's entirely different. It appears that if you're using ERV, the subject may actually believe that they are being viewed. They may feel the presence, so to speak.
Hmm. Boy, that opens up a whole new world of parameters of what are we truly physically and mentally capable of.
Yeah.
Let's go to first-time caller line. We've got Randy in Colorado. Randy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks a lot for listening this evening. What's your question for our guest?
Well, I have a couple of questions, but I also have a comment.
Okay.
I was in PSG in 1984, and I know John is choosing his words very carefully, and because there's another side to this story that most people don't know, and that is that, and I never really heard your whole conversation with him on the radio, but not entirely is all military voluntary to do it. They are kind of like thrown into it. Unfortunately, I was one that was. And they also don't disclose the fact that it is a one-on-one spy program also. I fell asleep in Pennsylvania, and he knows where I was at if he knows what was going on in Pennsylvania. I fell asleep in Pennsylvania on a Friday morning and woke up in another country and didn't even know that I had left. So they have another program that they call TMC, which is Telegraphic Mind Control. Not only can they put you in a different place, but you have the ability to RV back to someone else. No pictures are taken, and no evidence whatsoever is even relayed other than back to the RV. And I guess my question to him is I realize he wrote a book, and I realize he needs to be careful of what he says and how he says it, but he's 90% true. but there's a 10% that's still hidden. And I was just curious, did he serve in the military?
No, I've never served in the military. I have served for the military. As a private military subcontractor, I helped train the special forces like the Navy SEALs, special forces, Rangers, Air Force combat controllers, and certain members
of special force out of Fort Warren, Georgia.
And we taught them combat trauma management.
Yep.
But
have you explained to them that it's not voluntary? Have you explained to them that they actually spy on you 24/7, no matter where you're at?
Well, I really couldn't, you know, comment on that because I have no experience, never having been in the military. You know, I've worked with them, but I've never actually been one of them. So your experiences are actually, you know, beyond what I could really truthfully comment on. But I will say this, I do know for a fact from the military remote viewers that some of your assertions are correct, that they did things to the soldiers and they were never told about the possible ramifications.
All right, Randy, thank you for the insights and calling in. Let's go east of the Rockies. Patrick, you're on the Hudson on a tugboat listening, is that right?
Yeah, good morning.
Very cool. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've been listening to Coach Goods for a long time, and we've covered this topic quite a few times. It's always interesting. I just, the older I get, the more I think how we just, with such a wonderful gift as these extrasensory, you know, these extrasensory things like deja vu, road sensor, viewing and all that. We just think so earthly. It seems like we just constantly want to limit ourselves way to, our tactical type of thing. You know, where it's always just, you know, human, and we don't want to, it just seems like there's, with hundreds of millions of people out there who, you know, who believe that something's always bigger than us, you know, if more and more people could get into a meditative state, like yourself, with your special training there, it seems like we could do a lot more with that gift. I mean, dimensionally speaking, you know, and it's such a vast universe, and where it just seems like we're only limiting ourselves to Earth. Is that correct?
Well, I'd have to say that your perceptions are spot on. One of the things that I found that was even more important than the idea that I could view a target distant in space and time was the fact that that brings up the issues of actually who and what we really are. You know, what is this thing called consciousness? One of the things that really struck me was the fact that this opens up a whole new world. I mean, when you deal in multiple dimensions and moving in a world that has no limitations on time and space, and you are the one that's doing it, if people could realize that they are so much more than they believe they are, I think we would have a completely different world.
I agree.
100%.
Patrick, thank you for calling in. We have to take another break. When we come back, if we can give specific targets and specific locations that we want remote viewers to look into, and talking about the effect of the mind, can we, in fact, project into the mind of others for mind control using something like remote viewing? We'll ask our guest that when we return to Coast AM. John Herlosky, my guest this evening. His book, A Sorcerer's Apprentice, A Skeptic's Journey into the CIA's Project Stargate. Has there been any research or work done using remote viewing, maybe even the ERV version you mentioned, to focus on the actual target and affecting their consciousness, maybe pushing them to make a choice or a decision our way? Is that something that has been done?
Actually, yes, it has. Lynn Buchanan, under the direction of the program managers, codified the protocols for an adjunct, a more aggressive form of remote viewing called remote influencing. And this particular technology is actually used to affect an individual, their behavior. It's very controversial, and a lot of the, I should say that some of the remote viewers had a certain aversion to using that particular technology, but it does exist, and as I understand it, it was used on certain occasions.
Doesn't it seem strange to you that people like Morehouse with these abilities and knowledge would be allowed to live with that knowledge and training people outside of government parameters and doing that? It just seems to me that if this ability is real and the ability to push and control other people is real, once the government understood that, if they no longer have a use for you, it seems so bizarre to me that they don't just eradicate you. Because you would pose a threat. If I know how to get in and push, why wouldn't I focus on Obama and getting him to do something, change something, sign something that would benefit my party or my organization?
Well, it's a good point. I think that originally when Dave released his book and went through the experiences that he did that are depicted in his book, they had their chance to do it then, when it wouldn't have caused a ruckus because mm-hmm. no one knew about it. But once the book was published and was out, and Dave had been to a number of different places, and some of the other remote viewers also had come out into the public and were teaching, then if you eliminate somebody under those circumstances, you just give power to what they were talking about. I think it would be the last thing that any organization, let's say Fifth Column or whatever.
Well, I get that aspect that once you've taken it public, it makes it harder to eradicate that person because then it does draw attention, sure. Whether it's an accidental death or a legitimate, murder, mm-hmm. then people are going to start thinking this. But it would just seem to me that if this type of ability occurs and takes place, why let somebody out there that will teach it and propagate and perpetuate this ability and technology? If the government is as murderous and sneaky and underhanded as it appears in a lot of these cases, that would seem like it would be counterproductive for them to allow outsiders to learn this ability.
Well, you have a point. Letting the knowledge of such a technology out there is definitely, I would think, being counterproductive to a government mm-hmm. that would had something to hide along those lines. But I think based on the government's handling of the remote viewing program, from what I've heard from the actual remote viewers, I think they were more relieved than anything else that the technology was dropped from the use in the intelligence services. I think the United States, Western culture, has more an interest in actual weaponry. We found that to be the case in Project Trojan Warrior. This mind-body integration program was extremely successful with the special forces. They did outrageously incredible things after they had learned the technology. And what happened? The guy who ran the program for the Army was promoted. A new colonel came in and decided he wasn't into that touchy-feely stuff, and he put the money, instead of initiating a Trojan Warrior program, into more guns and bullets.
All right, let's take our break. We'll come back. We've got Ross in Concord, California. We've got Wayne in Chicago and Mike in Montana on deck here on Coast to Coast AM. Wild card line one, welcome to Coast to Coast AM. Ross in Concord, California, what's your
Hello.
Question for our guest?
Did you ever find out what really happened with Adolf Hitler, with 9/11, JFK, the Oklahoma City bombing, and so forth.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Ross. Have you looked into specifics like that to see if you can get any insights to what really occurred? Did Hitler really die? Was JFK assassinated by more than one gunman? Did you ever put yourself in that, or are you aware of people like David Morehouse have done research on that and have remote viewed historic points like that?
Well, yeah, I was curious just like he is as to the answers to those questions. And when I asked Dave Morehouse about it, he told me straight out that the government doesn't ask us to target things that they already know the truth on.
So, understandable, right, as a government program. But if somebody gave you the target without you understanding or knowing what you were, I mean, it would still seem like somebody might have an interest in getting that information.
Yes, that could very well be. I've never been targeted on it as far as I know. And when I asked Dave about it, like I said, he said that the government wasn't interested in remote viewers accessing those targets because they already knew the truth about those.
You said that you do a lot of work with missing persons. How accurate and how many people have you been responsible for helping to find?
Well, we were working on helping to locate Bo Bergdahl. And we have also worked on some other missing people from a law enforcement standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been doing it in the background because part of the problem in using remote viewing under these circumstances is that it tends to generate a lot of negative publicity. You know, when the media gets a hold of the idea that remote viewers or psychics are involved in a investigation of a murder or something along those lines, they tend to sensationalize it. And it takes away from the investigation, number one. And number two, it tends to make us all look like, you know, Miss Cleo on the...
Right, for murder and things, I understand that. But if you're looking into a missing persons case and you're locating missing persons, I got to guess you hit 2, 3, 4 in even in your lifetime, you're going to be considered an extremely successful and gifted person.
Oh,
even though you may have missed 50 or 60, if you're able to legitimately focus and find 3 to 4, you're a massive hit.
Well, one of the people, one of the former remote viewers who is, I would say, probably the best at finding missing people is Joe McMonigal. Mm-hmm. And for those viewers out there, those listeners who are interested in that particular type of work, his website is excellent. He's had a number of incontrovertible successes in finding missing people, and he's very, very good at it.
Let's go to wild card line 2, Wayne in Chicago. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Yes, good morning. I agree with your guest when he says things like past, present, and future time are all one. I came to that conclusion myself a long time ago. But what I want to know is, like, he said that if he would target the dark side of the moon and see if there's any intelligent life, he said he's not interested in things like that. But he said that he needs to go into it blind, not knowing what it is. My question is, can he go into it knowing what it is? Because I saw a show that Dan Aykroyd used to have, and he did a show about remote viewers, and they were targeting each other. So that's my question, and I'll take the ass off the air. Thank you.
The problem with viewing something that you, if you know the target that you're viewing, you can't help but bring forth your own ideas and thoughts and intimations into your viewing session.
Yeah, we mentioned that earlier. It's not a subjective point, then. You've got your own color, your own perspective of what you think may have happened.
Exactly. And your mind, it always wants to put a label on something. So if you go in there with labels already available for it, it's going to start generating a whole range of things that you want to be seeing. That's the reason why remote viewing has the limitation that you go into the target blind. Now, if you want to view, if you want to send viewers against the target on the far side of the moon, then what you do is you have a project manager who makes up the target, assigns the coordinates, and then assigns the viewers to do the target. And then he does the analysis afterwards. The viewers are always passive. They're, consider them like extrasensory cameras, so to speak.
All right. We've got wild card line three, Mike in Montana. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello.
One quick question.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if a remote viewer or a remote influencer could change or affect the outcome of events in the past.
According to quantum mechanics, at least some of the theories that we've seen so far in quantum mechanics, the answer is no. That may change once we have a coherent theory of quantum gravity. But according to the last paper that I read, and unfortunately it escapes me who the author was, I want to say Gerard de Hooft, the Dutch physicist, but I don't quote me on that. I'd have to look it up what the citation is. But I don't believe that you can do something like that, as far as I know. I've never heard any of the remote viewers from the military program say anything like that. Remote influencing is actually affecting the mental state of your target, trying to get them to do something or to feel something. And it doesn't have the same type of ability that this that you're talking about, you know, being actual physically going back in time and changing something. It's not a physical change.
I kind of thought with time being like the fluid of motion, kind of our fourth dimension, that we should be able to maybe bend it in our favor a little bit and go back.
But if we could do that, I think then you run into that whole grandfather clause, right? Because if you're able to go back and manipulate it, then it's already been manipulated. Therefore, there's nothing left to manipulate. That's kind of where the conundrum and the problems with time control or time travel would be affected.
That there's a cosmic censorship that doesn't allow things like that to happen, that the quantum effects cause whatever change that you could possibly make in the past from ever happening. And if you believe the multi-worlds theory, where each person splits...
Right, every decision universe, splits it, right.
Then right. All you're going to do is you're just going to view in what you were thinking is affecting your past. All you're doing is just simply viewing an alternate universe.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go wildcard line four, Jason, Nazareth, Pennsylvania. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I appreciate all the information that you are giving us. I've had a couple weird situations where it's like deja vu / I already know I was here / my first memory was coming through like this tunnel when I was born. It was this weird tunnel. And I'm born, and there's a checkered floored board on the ground. And it's like, that was what I was first left with. And as time has gone on, I'm 30 years old now. As time has gone on, I've been able to read people better. If I limit myself to the television and the media and other people's, other people's agendas, then I'm fine. But there's always been a part of me that if I close my eyes or if I listen to the voice that is like, what the heck is over there? I remote view just as good as anybody else. It's just, do you accept it and do you pronounce it? And that's
all right.
My problem at 30 years old.
Well, thank you for tuning in and sharing that. You wanted to weigh in on that?
Yeah, actually. It says we found during the research on remote viewing is that this is an innate ability. Although I, as a remote viewer, was trained in a methodology and a set of protocols, the actual ability, the process by which I am able to do remote viewing is an innate thing in all of us. So his experience is a valid one.
But with the parameters and having logistical rules in place, it probably makes it easier and more concise to focus and get results.
Oh, yes, very much so. Yes.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Paul, Seattle, we've got about a minute left here. Do you have a quick question?
Yeah, quick question and a comment.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. I heard that the Russians, they could murder somebody with remote viewing. And I hate to have this next question, but I wanted to ask, and how do you remote view? What do you focus on if you don't know exactly where they're at? And thanks for taking my call.
All right. Thank you, Paul. And we kind of covered that earlier. Yeah. How do you get this information when you have no clue what you're connecting to?
Well, his first comment regarding the Russians using remote influencing to try and kill somebody, they actually did that research. An excellent book on that particular aspect of remote viewing is Schrader and what's the other name? Oh God, I can't think of it, but it's Psychic Phenomena in the Behind the Iron Curtain, something like that.
Okay.
I can't quite remember. But what was the other portion of the question?
Well, I think he was talking about that, and then he was talking about how is it that you exactly connect to something that you don't know.
We don't know how you're able to just take two sets of four or whatever number of numbers, but these encrypted coordinates that have no meaning to the target. We don't understand why you're able to go to the target that the person wants you to view.
Well, actually, you can. You kind of answered that earlier. It's the power of intention. If somebody's put the intention towards what they want you to direct, that almost works as a key to get you to the lock that you need to unlock.
Yes, but as to actually how that intention drives the remote viewing, we're not sure yet.
Thank you so much for being our guest this evening. I appreciate your time. I want to thank Jeff and Gina back home for helping us out with the show behind the scenes. Tim Dennis, my engineer here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Lisa Lyon, and of course, George Norrie for allowing me to sit in and be a part of the show. My guests, Christy Beam, her book, Miracles from Heaven. Make sure to pick that up. And John Herlosky with his book, A Sorcerer's Apprentice, A Skeptic's Journey into the CIA's Project Stargate. I'm Dave Schrader. Check out darknessradio.com, and I'll be back here hosting again on the 16th of May. Thank you for being a part of my world, and be kind to one another. And remember to tune in to the best in overnight talk radio 7 nights a week, coast to coast AM.